It's time for you to define your brand. This podcast is designed to arm you with the tools and confidence needed to build a standout brand in today's marketplace. I'm your host, Matt Crane, and I'm honored to be joined by my co-host and CEO of Rush Impact Marketing and Rush Impact Media, Jeremy Warner.
Matt, it's awesome to be here, and I'm excited to share and engage with our audience, listeners, and special guests that will be joining the show. Most importantly, I'm excited to help all of you take charge of your brand. Matt, you know what we say around here, your brand, your responsibility.
If you can't live the life you want to lead, it's your own fault. Are we producing stuff that matters, or are we producing crap? The question becomes whether or not you're jacking with your success or you're jacking with my success.
This week on Define Your Brand, transportation finance king, author, entrepreneur, and CEO Matt Monero joins host Matt Crane and Jeremy Warner to break down how he has built his company to its multi-million dollar height, why he's torching that to rebuild it to $1 billion, and why all of us need more money.
You got to believe that your business is going to make it. You've got to believe that your dreams are capable, that the revenue, the profitability, even the retirement account that you and your wife or you and your husband dream about, that it is possible.
Let's all welcome Matt Monero to the Define Your Brand podcast show.
Well, I don't know about you guys, Jeremy. I know that you and I are pumped, but I got to tell you right now, there's a treat about to take place on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Facebook Live. The comments are already going ballistic, and we haven't even introduced this individual yet. But, you know, he's a true friend of mine, and he's a gentleman that has given so much to me in such a short amount of time that this episode is something that I'm super excited to share with our audience. And you know, Matt, it's truly great to have you on the podcast, because I'm excited more than anything to share your growth and your better understanding of building a true brand with our audience and live viewers. And I truly appreciate you taking the time out of your day for us.
It's my pleasure, guys. I mean it. My true, absolute pleasure.
Matt, it's also with great honor for you to be on our podcast. I'm excited to be able to share with our audience, our live viewers, one of the most dynamic business owners that I have had the opportunity to watch, listen, learn, and grow as a business owner myself. So I know this podcast is going to help many. Matt, you're the host of a show called The Grit Show, and your latest show talks about management by objectives, how most businesses don't know what their own mission is, what hills the team is climbing. We just interviewed Russell Brunson and his huge why it's important to create that culture. Build an audience that is your tribe. Will you please share your mission at CFF with us and how you built your raving fan base around CFF?
Look, it'd be my pleasure. I mean, the answer to that to that question, though, is that it didn't happen quickly. It was done wrong. I mean, I built a big business with a metal stick and a whip, and I thought that's how it got done. And the reality is, we got to $100 million, and I knew that it was broken. I knew it wasn't going to get me to 200 or 300 or 500 or a billion. I just knew in my soul that it wasn't built right. And in 2015, and for all of 2016, I made the decision to change it. And we torched my company, my $100+ million business. I burned it to the ground. And we started right back with core values and mission statement. Our mission statement at Commercial Fleet is CFF exists to help our clients and ourselves reach our full potential through expertise, expectations, and gratitude. And that's what we live by. We have four core values that I run the business by. Everything that we do gets overlaid against those core values in the mission statement to see whether or not we should be doing it. The problem is, guys, that for 20 years, I didn't do any of that. And you know, as business owners, that you're not doing it right either. Because most business owners are the number one sales guy who leaves the company because they hate working for the son of a gun they work for. And they say, I'll do it better on my own. And they don't understand what the hell they're doing. Because business, especially today, is far more than just sales. You can put up revenue, but you need a lot of other stuff to make that revenue sticky. And, you know, if you're looking to exit, I was just at Duke University a couple of weeks ago, and we had these long, intensive meetings with private equity guys. And the number one thing that the private equity guy cares about is the stickiness of your client base. They only care about recurring revenue. And so, you know, if you don't have that in your business, and you've got employees that really are half in or half out, and you've got clients that are sort of half in or half out, your company culture isn't clearly defined, you got no social media, you have no marketing, you have no exit. And every business should be built, like Michael Gerber and Emuth talks about, every business should be built with exit in mind. Whether you want to exit or not is irrelevant. It's just, it should be built to exit. And so I did it. And it cost me $30 million in 2016. And we had a very bad third quarter and fourth quarter in 2016 because we lost 9 of our top producers. Not my top people, but the reason above average producers did not like the changes. They did not like the employment agreement that I put in place, which forced their hand to show me their trust. And I talk about it in one of my speeches called The Torch. And I even put the W-2 of the highest paid guy who left my company up on the screen. I black out his social and his name and all that, but his W-2 goes up on the big screen, and he made $567,000 in personal income here in 2015 and didn't want to sign my employment agreement and left.
Wow.
So that, by the way, guys, that's his take. 567 is his take. So you guys can run your margins in your business, and I can run my margins in my business and realize that's a big hickey for me, man, right? That's a nice haircut for me off one guy. But that's how committed I was to it, and I would suggest everybody needs to get that level of commitment. Commitment's never been my problem, right? Knowledge, understanding, MBA-type thought process, I never had any of that stuff. But commitment, I got that.
You know, to kind of expand on that, so once again, everyone, if you're not listening to Mr. Monero, Matt Monero, you got to understand, man, this guy's gritty from the jump, okay? He gets after it. You can tell in his voice. You can tell in the way he inflects his words, man. There's no playing around. There's no games. He's not afraid to roll up his sleeves, put on some jeans, and get after it. So I love this. But to expand on that, raving fans, thinking bigger, acting bigger, creating a culture. You talked about torching your million-dollar business. Why now, after 20 years, torch it and burn it to the ground?
Man, I get asked that question a lot, and I during the torch, I would ask myself that question a lot too, because I didn't need to do it. I mean, I really didn't. I could have just left it the way it is. I have no exit strategy in mind either. I mean, I got 3 boys. Who knows? Maybe they want to take over this company. I'm not in the game to exit. I've been doing this my whole life. I started it when I was 25 years old. So this is, the company is me, man. This is my, it's in my DNA and my family's DNA. You know, look, man, entrepreneurs, you know, I mean, it's like saying, why grow your company once you get to a certain level, right? Dude, that's what we do, man. I mean, we just, you know, you gotta grow. I mean, there is no finish line. There's no goal line. All that stuff is so silly, dude. As we all know, you know, the only thing we realize when we're tapping into our potential is we got more potential. And that's the thing that happened with me, man. When we got to $140 million, I was like, well, let's go to 250. And I started saying that around the office, and some of my people would come in and say, boss, we ain't going to 250. And I'd say, sure we are. They're like, are you kidding me? We can't even get a set of docs out to a customer without them being a mistake in it, right? We're sending overnights, 3 overnights, when we should be sending 1 overnight to a customer. Well, you know, you add that up to the thousands of units that we do, guys. Our FedEx bill in 2015 was $250,000. Wow. Our FedEx, we have budgeted our FedEx bill for 2017 to be $40,000. That's efficiencies that were created against total inefficiencies. Because on my way to 100, all I said was just send it, doc, send it. We'll fix it. So big takeaway for someone who's thinking about doing the exact same thing. Number one is you have to have the mission statement and the core values. And those are not designed by the team. Those are designed by the owner. So no PR company, nobody goes out and figures that stuff out. The owner's job is to build the company with the vision that he or she wants it to be. And the people around that want it or they don't. But that is not the choice. The choice is for the owner to build the company that they envision for themselves, for their family, for their vendors, for their clients, for their employees. That's the owner's doggone job. And 99% of the owners never take enough time to figure out what that is. They just get caught up in this, you know, ridiculous treadmill, as I was, as so many people are. It's a messy life that most entrepreneurs live in.
The only thing we know when we tap into our potential is that we have more potential. Ladies and gentlemen, words of thunder from Mr. Matt Manero, baby. Love.
I've been taking notes.
Guys, the answer to your question is, there is no stop. I mean, you just keep going. I mean, true entrepreneurs, they're not looking to stop. We just want to keep going. And so fixing, tweaking, tinkering is constant. But here's a big takeaway I would give to the audience too, guys. We talked about this briefly, but most business owners take complex problems and they minimize them into simple problems. But the problems stay complex. And so how does that relate into real world? You have a salesperson who is been there a long time. And so he or she is under a very bad compensation plan on behalf of the company. Probably a very good compensation plan for the salesperson because they've gotten a 5% raise every year and they've been with you 10 years and now they're making tons of the deal, right? We have that problem in our office. And so if you don't treat that as a complex problem and you treat that as a simple problem, you end up with 8 different compensation plans and 8 different people making money and accounting is going crazy and other salespeople are mad because this guy was here longer and he's making more money off less deals. Those are complex problems that most business owners turn into simple problems. And I would challenge everyone to close the door, put your feet up, get a highlighter, get a marker, and start whiteboarding those things out. And really give complex problems the focus, the attention that they deserve, and stop looking to fix them with a quick Band-Aid, as I did for all those years, right? And we don't do that anymore. We spend a tremendous amount of time giving complex problems the attention that they deserve.
Well, one thing for me, you know, having this podcast is obviously to share as much value as we can to our audience, but it also gives us an opportunity to bring individuals on that I'm taking a lot of key notes on and key takeaways that's going to help us, you know. So one thing I loved what Grant did, and he put everybody on stage for him. Yeah. You know, yeah, he wanted this GrowthCon for everybody. Of course he did. But he's sitting in the audience putting all these great minds on stage so he can learn from them as well. So, you know, that's – I don't know about our audience, but, you know, some of the key takeaways I have now: mission statement, core values, commitment, efficiency, having the right people in place, and focus on the complex problems. Don't make them minimal. Matt, one thing that I strongly believe in is that you're always networking. You shared a story about your son's lacrosse game where you became very, very good friends with one of the dads, Richard Kinder, who was worth $7 billion. Can you share with us the number one trait that you learn from billionaires?
I know a couple of them, and I'm fortunate enough that, you know, they'll take my call, which is kind of cool. That didn't come automatically, though, man. That took hard work of leveraging up and really trying. And I made a very conscious effort to meet people far more successful than me. I didn't do it early on in my career. It was a huge mistake. That was a self-esteem issue for me, and maybe some people in the audience can relate to that. You know, my real dad left my mom and I when I was 6 months old. I never saw him. I never met him. And then my mother remarried to my adopted dad, who was not a great guy, not a bad guy. Let me rephrase that. I mean, he missed lots of opportunities. So my whole upbringing, my adopted dad called me stupid, moron, retard, idiot. And I'm not talking like once in a while, guys. I'm talking about every day of all of my memory. That's what I was called. And so what happens is two things. One, it could crush you. Or two, it did with me, which was create this anger, this chip on my shoulder, and this sort of quarantine of that thought process, right? But the reality is you can't not buck that trend all the time. It seeps in and your subconscious begins to believe it. And it plagued me, probably not until I was in my 20s, because I was fighting against it, anger, chip on my shoulder, stuff. But it plagued me for the next 15 years as I became a dad and a husband. And I started to ask myself, how could you ever leave a kid with my three boys? How could I ever do that? But my dad did it. The word stupid, all those words are refused to be used in my house. They have never been used in my house. There is big problems if I ever hear my boys talking to each other like that. For all the money in the world, I would never call my kids stupid or those words ever. But yet I kept hearing it. I kept hearing it my whole life. And so I didn't feel worthy that I could have anything to bring to those billionaires or those big heavy hitters. And finally, I got comfortable with it about 5 years ago and said, shit, I got a big company anyway, man. I mean, I may not be a billionaire, but I'm all right, man. I don't got to go to work tomorrow. I got enough. Not enough to get me my jet, but I got enough to, you know, not have to worry about the pink slips anymore. We should talk about that because that's a big deal too. When is enough? But I started reaching out to my network, man. I started saying, who knows some rich freaking people that I can talk to? I mean, I want the best of the best. I don't want this guy a little bit above me. I want big boys. And I started to put that out in the universe. And wouldn't you know it, my son started playing on this lacrosse team. And who's over there but a billionaire? And my kid's pretty good at scoring goals. So it got me a little attention too. And he and I became very good friends. And then this other guy who knows killing me. It's a long-winded answer to your question, which is, the number one trait I know of billionaires is how freaking optimistic they are. Those guys are not living for yesterday or today. They see the future. They see years in the future. And how many of us are still living for today or this week? And these guys are looking 5 years down the road, and they're constantly making decisions of what's going to happen in the future. And all of them have tremendous optimism for it. I mean, all you have to do is listen to Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett says, it's America. We're going to be okay, right? I mean, it's a simple observation that totally connects to optimism. And so you have to be freaking optimistic, man. You've got to believe that the future is going to be better than today. And I think that's one of the reasons that I was able to build my business. As I said, it has to get better than this. It has to get better than this. It has to get better than this. Right? Yeah, but don't we work with people who you know, their heads down, right? I mean, today's a terrible day off of one bad phone call. The customer wasn't as nice as they should have been, and their whole day is wrecked or their week is wrecked. Or, you know, it happens all the time. I see it in my office too. And I call them in and I said, listen, man, don't stop looking about what just happened. I need you to look in the future. Is tomorrow going to be better than today? Then today don't matter.
Well, and it's awesome. I love this. I absolutely love this because part of the culture that Jeremy has bred into the life of Russian Impact Media, Russian Impact Marketing, everything we do here is that, like, you got a dream, right? Like, one of the things that we do every day is he knows what my goals are, but he wanted to know what my dreams were. Yeah, because he can't help me achieve my goals if I'm not still dreaming, right? That optimism, that just looking down the road, because I'm a guy, man, I'm high emotion. You don't take my call today, I'm pissed. You don't close that deal with me, I'm ready to cut you off, right? And the first thing he tells me, he's like, Matt, what are you mad about, bub? It don't matter. Like, what matters is what went wrong? How can you solve a problem? How can you add more value? How can you do, you know, look down the road? And I love how you did that. And so here's what I took away from what Matt's really talking about, is that you have to take ownership, you have to take accountability, and you have to take responsibility. You have to do those three things as an owner. And here's the cool thing. The CEO doesn't need to be the only one. The employees own their brand. They own their business. They own their book. And if they can't be responsible, take ownership, and be accountable, they got to roll out. So
what kind of Matt, to interrupt, here's what ends up happening, though. When you're getting your business off the ground, you're afraid of that, right? Because are you afraid that your top sales guy might make more money than you? Dude, that happened many years for me, where my top dog did, made more money than I took home. So are you afraid of that? Or are you really okay with that because you're going to catch up sooner or later, which happens for most people when they get out of the pain side of their business, they get into the pleasure side, which is you've caught up. But for a long period of time, most business owners are making less than some people in their office. So if they're not dreaming about it's going to come back to me tenfold and I'm going to make up for this shortness in my 401k plan or the tightness at home or the vacation that I can't take, but my number one guy can. If you're not seeing the big picture, dude, you're just it's a bad existence for you too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing is that when you know you've got more talent, more grit, more hustle, but you're not seeing the bigger picture and the less talented people around you, that's a problem too.
That's only short term, though. We all know that. Everybody listening to this knows that. Dude, that's only short term, man. The karma, action, smarts, and a little luck always wins. Always wins over time.
So you know to kind of expand on once again, I'm blown away at a lot of this information. I'm taking notes. The audience is going crazy right now in the Facebook live stream. The comments are going bananas. But you know, and I knew it would.
Without question.
But you know, one of the things you said about getting around billionaires is you had to level up. You had to scale up, right? You had to be optimistic again. You had to start thinking with optimism. But one of the things you also talk about, and it's actually one of it segue into now your second book, which is going to be on a major publisher. Random House Books purchased the publishing rights to this book, and I'm excited about it. But it's more than just it's a real topic. It's real time. It's real life, and it's important. And I would love for you to share with us why you find it so vital to teach, explain, and express for all of us on why you need more money.
The book started out with a story. We lost my brother-in-law, my wife's only brother. And Matt, you know the story, but we lost him he was 46, a wife and four kids. He died with no life insurance, no health insurance, and $100 in the bank. And it was probably the most devastating thing that has occurred to my family. My wife and I have been together 20 years. And if you had to pick the one person in her life that should not have left her, and I mean it over me and my boys, I mean it, and that's a weird thing to say, as any father and husband would, it was that her brother left her. It was a terrible situation for our family. And then when you add in the fact that he was busted ass broke, dude, that was just so unbelievably eye-opening for me. And so I wrote a story about it, and I sent it to my friend Hank Norman, and Hank Norman said this should be a book. And he got me in contact with Dupree Miller, by the way, Leveraging Up. He got me in contact with Dupree Miller. Dupree Miller is Tony Robbins' agent, Joel Olstein's agent, Dr. Phil's agent. And they loved it, and they took it to four publishers in New York, and Penguin Random House bought it right away and paid me a big fat advance. And the manuscript and the book comes out in March of 2018. The original working title was called Middle Aged Man's Bitch Slap, and they forced me to change that to I Need More Money. And now it looks like it's even going to be changed now to You Need More Money is the working what I think will be the final title of the book. It's 75,000 words. And it's two stories. One of how does it happen, you know, that my brother-in-law could have worked so hard and not had anything to show for it. And then what's the other component, which is the amazing ability to have had your money right and be able to drop in like my wife and I did and literally remove all of that guilt and financial pressure for him, and how it just changed everything for his recovery, because part of his sickness, I believe, was caused by his lack of money and his inability to get ahead of money. He was chasing it forever. And, you know, we talk about in the book, listen, guys, money is just this thing, man, right? Most people think it's like this lion with claws and it wants to get you. It doesn't. Money wants to be submissive. It wants to be controlled by you. But you have to get ahead of it, right? And then you have to tell money what you're going to do with it. And that's what money wants. Money rolls over like a submissive dog when you're ahead of it. And it just lifts its legs up and wants you to pet its belly and say, you taking care of me? You looking at me? You adding to me? You putting me in the right place? You giving me my food and my water? That's what money is. And most people think of it as something completely different. This jagged edge that's always trying to cut them. It's not, man. It's the exact opposite. It's this big, lovable ball when you get your hands around it and you beat it down and you tell money what it's going to do for you versus the opposite. So that's the story. A very emotional story for me. I literally right now, this moment, I still feel all of that power. And so to answer your question, Matt, I want to tell more people about it, and I want to help people. I want to help people not be caught like that. And I also want to help people be on the other side so they can drop in and help more people because they got their shit together.
Love it. Wow. I love it.
Well, Matt, we greatly thank you for sharing that story. Very, very powerful. And it actually leads into the next question on, just getting to that false positive. And many businesses are living in a very dangerous place right now, a place that are costing them thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. We all have been here as business owners. Then you start to make a little money, you start moving up, you get comfortable. One thing that I've taught myself through the last 10 years of being a business owner is having that mindset to always be broke. All right? Let fear drive my actions forward. And always work that way. Explain that how a lot of us live in this false positive.
Of course, it's the most dangerous place to live, and so many people do it. It's when the bills don't come on pink slips anymore, when you can take your wife out to the nice steak dinner, when you can buy the $2,000 purse, and you really think you're moving the needle in net worth. And I refer to it in the book. There's three phases to it. The first phase is broke. The second phase is accumulation. The third phase is rich. And accumulation, broke is, by the way, the easiest phase to get out of. Accumulation is the hardest phase to get out of. And rich is the easiest phase to stay into. It truly is. And then, but that when I was writing the book, I was saying to myself, I don't believe that's enough, man. See, the thing I always wanted was I wanted somebody to tell me, what the hell are the numbers? Like, where am I? How do I compare? Because what do we do? We're always like, oh, I'm doing better than my neighbor or my brother or my father or my friends. But you don't really know. I mean, not looking at their tax returns or bank statements. You don't know. And so I spent a lot of time on a deep dive coming up with what I thought was an appropriate formula of how do you know where you are money-wise, right? And the formula is really a 1-3-5-10. So I'll share it with you guys. It's in the book. And I never talked about this because it's coming out in the book, but I'm happy to tell you guys about it now. The formula is simple, 1-3-5-10. In your 20s, you need to have a net worth, not liquid net worth, but you need to have a net worth of 1 times your income. In your 30s, you need to have a net worth of 3 times your income. In your 40s, you need to have a net income of 5 times your income. And in your 50s, right up to 60, you need to have a net income of 10 times your income. And I ran that scenario backwards and forwards, up and down. I tested it against tons and tons of people, both rich and poor. And I knew that it worked when I play poker second Tuesday of every month with these old Jewish guys. They're all like 75 years old. I'm the youngest guy in the group. We played for the last 13 years together. And all we do is talk about food and money. That's it, right? And play a little poker. And And they're always asking me about the book, how's it coming? And the hardest nosed guy, the richest guy there, the hardest nosed guy is never afraid to talk about money. I hit him with that formula. And like he is a retired judge, by the way. And just like a judge would do, he sat back like this and he's like, yeah, that's it. That is the formula. I said, I hit it, man. I got it. So let's put the math to it. Let's say that you're making 50, right? 50 grand. In your 20s, you need a $50,000 net worth. In your 30s, you need 150,000. In your 40s, you need 250. And in your 50s, you need $500,000. Okay, $500,000. Now I have something to shoot for. By the way, $500,000 on a guy who's making 50 grand, he did pretty well for himself in his 50s. That's a hell of a lot more than the average person in their 50s or 60s will have when they retire. So he did okay for himself if he just used that as a formula. But now crank it up. Go to 100. 100 in your 20s, by the way, sounds like a lot of money. There's a shitload of people in their 20s making $100,000, right? It was a huge number for me in my 20s, but there's a lot of 20-somethings making 100K. So it's not this far-fetched number. It's another concept of the book. We're all chasing these old numbers, right? The money is moved. Everybody thinks 100 and a million is a big deal. It's not. So in your 30s at 100, you got a net worth of 300. In your 40s at 100, you got a net worth of 500. And in your 50s at 100, you have a net worth of $1 million. Once again, on 100K, at 59 years old, if you have $1 million put aside, you're way ahead of the game. And so now it gets interesting, right? What about the top earners? What about the ones that are starting to do well? What about the guys that are making 200 or 300? And you apply that formula, take that out just for a second. Let's say you're making 300. By the time you're in your 50s, you should have a net worth of $3 million. That should put a very clear understanding of what false positive is. Anything less than 3 mil in your 50s, or if you backed it out and went to what the formula would be in your 40s, which would be 1.5 million, you're way short, man. You're in false positive. And that should be a big wake-up call for everybody that says, I need more money. So I better stop buying that $2,000 purse, or I better start making more money and stacking and racking a little bit more. Because that bullshit that we all heard of, save 10%, you retire poor, 15%, you retire middle class, 20%, you retire rich, all that's bullshit. Dude, you need to save 20, 30, 40% of your income to be able to move the needle of net worth, period, end of story. You get a wife who doesn't work and three kids in select sports and a big house, dude, you need to save more money. So I know that's the wake up call. That's the way it shakes out.
but you know, here's the great thing about it, right? It is we knew this episode was going to bring real information. Yes. Because one thing about Matt, guys, is we didn't even get to this, but I mean, he's a true teacher. He's a real coach. I mean, I watch the guy every single day on his live streams. He's not worried about himself. He's worried about what is my team getting from me today. You know, he does these scrums where he's in there showing motivation, or he's bringing big level people to talk to his team.
Or he's in 50 degree pool water.
Or he's in 50 degree pool water shaving and giving us real time. You know, and so here's the cool thing, though, guys. This man also is the president and CEO of Commercial Fleet Finance, and he's funded over $1 billion in transportation equipment. So you guys got to get over to cffnationwide.com, learn more about his business, inquire about how you can do business with them. And then you want to get to mattmonero.com so you can stay in front of the latest blogs, updates on when the book's going to be coming out, where he's going to be speaking. And hey, he even does mentorship live on Facebook. So if you've got the balls to reach out and pitch the man on why you need him as a mentor, you never know. You might just get the call.
Did you see that most recent one where I told the kid, I said, fire your partner, save your money, and go back to college?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And the guy just sit there like, okay.
But that was an easy one. I mean, he served it up on his own. There wasn't that anybody could have given that advice.
Okay, you know? Absolutely. Well, once again, everybody on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, Pandora, everyone watching live right now on Facebook, I want to say thank you. I also just want to let you guys know that Matt Monero is a true giant in not only the transportation space, but the guy is just a true mentor. If you truly have the grit, if you truly are willing to do whatever it takes, someone's willing to get in front of you and help push you and guide you in the right direction. So, Matt, I really appreciate you coming on the show, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, too, guys. It was my pleasure. It was awesome.
Awesome, man. Have a good night.
We'll be right back.